Call the meeting to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Mr. Smith, roll call, please.
Chair Sundin is present. Vice Chair Vang?
Present.
Vang present. Anderson?
Anderson present.
Anderson present. Burkle?
Present.
Burkle present. Eklund?
Present.
Eklund present. Hansen R?
Hansen R present.
Hansen R present. Hansen J? Hansen J present. Cleavorn?
Cleavorn present.
Cleavorn present. Lippert?
Lippert present.
Lippert present. Lewick?
Present.
Lewick present. Miller? Excused. Nelson?
Present.
Nelson present. Thompson? Thompson?
Thompson. Thompson present, Chair.
Thompson present. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smith. The minutes of the last meeting of the Ag Committee were provided with the meeting material and are posted online. Vice Chair Vang, if you reviewed the minutes, can I get a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the minutes for the meeting of March 3rd, 2021.
Any questions or corrections from the committee? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. We have four bills up on the agenda today. First is a department policy bill. A few housekeeping notes before we get going. Committee staff worked with caucus staffs and determined how much time we need for this bill. The approach has been used reflects that input. Although this is a very short bill, we'll use the same process used in the past. We'll hear the bill today, take testimony, and then lay it over. We really haven't heard any other strictly policy bills. House File 1898 will be our 2021 Ag Policy Bill. If people want to submit amendments, deadline is 4 p.m. on Tuesday. We will take up amendments and vote the bill out to the floor on Wednesday's meeting. That said, with that, Vice Chair, Vang will assume the chair.
Chair Sundin, please move your bill and introduce your testifier.
Thank you, Vice Chair Vang. I move the House File 1898 with the intention of laying it over until the next meeting. I have with me today Peter Chessup from the department. He will explain the details of the bill and be available for questions with other staff as necessary.
I see Peter Chessup. You can start your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Peter Chessett. I serve as the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. First off, thank you to Representative Sundin for carrying House File 1898, which is the agency's policy bill. As you can see, members, it is very short. It's highly technical and non-controversial. So what I would propose doing is just doing a simple walkthrough of the various sections, Madam Chair. And then as Chair Sundin did mention, I do have some colleagues on hand to answer some of the more technical questions if there are any.
Please feel free to proceed.
Thank you, ma'am. So Section 1 of House File 1898 pertains to mental health data. It would make private data collected and maintained by the Department of Agriculture and the MinSCU system on individuals who seek assistance through our Minnesota Farm and Rural Helpline. It would allow for the emergency release of some data to the appropriate parties if necessary to protect the health and or safety of an individual. And Madam Chair, members, I do want to just note for the record that we do plan on asking that this section actually be removed from the bill. It is our understanding that because it deals with data privacy issues, we would have to make another committee stop and just In terms of where we're at in the session, we would prefer to remove this section, deal with it next session, and ensure that our policy bill does not miss deadline. Moving on, sections 2 and 3 pertain to the Good Food Access Program. It's a technical change that would broaden the eligibility for the program and make it easier for retailers with limited administrative capacity to apply for and receive Good Food Access Program funding. Sections 4 and 5 pertain to our bioincentive program. It's a technical amendment that would exempt claims for advanced biofuels or renewable chemicals from preparing an agricultural cellulosic biomass sourcing plan when the feedstock is corn kernel fiber, cellulose, or biogas. This exemption was intended to be part of the original statute, but was unintentionally left out due to a drafting error. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, that is House File 1898 in its entirety. And as I said, we are happy to answer any and all questions. Thank you.
Okay, I will open up the floor for questions. I see Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mr. Jessup, could you give us just a rundown on the background of the Good Food Access Program, namely how much funding it's received these last couple of years, and have the applications for grants exceeded the amount available to be awarded out? Just some background on how the program has functioned in recent years.
Mr. Chessa?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I would really appreciate if my colleague Ashley Bress, who is our grants supervisor, could address those good questions.
Ms. Bress?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. The Good Food Access Program goes back, I think it's to 2017. I don't have the exact year in front of me. I apologize for that. But it was originally funded out of a separate appropriation into the Ag Fund, so that those funds did not expire. I think it was two budget cycles ago, funding for the program moved into Agri. At that point, the budget writer allowed us to use up to $300,000 on an annual basis for the program. Demand for the program has far exceeded the available funds. This year, I have to go back and look at our exact numbers, but I want to say that there was approximately $1.6 million in requests, but we only had $300,000 to award. That's pretty characteristic of where the program has been overall. You know, generally, you know, I let people know that we're going to be able to fund, you know, one in five, one in four, one in six of the applications that we receive. So interest in the program has been very, very strong overall.
Follow-up, Representative Anderson?
No, thank you for that.
Any further remarks or questions from members? Okay, I don't see any testifiers, and no written testimony was submitted. So any closing comments, Chair Sundin, before the bill is laid over?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I have nothing but thanks to the department for putting the bill together, and look forward to any amendments that might arise on the next meeting. So thank you very much. I guess with that, I'd renew my motion that the bill be laid over until the next meeting.
Okay. Chair Sundin renews his motion to be laid over. Next bill we have is House File 1433, and so Chair Sundin will resume the gavel.
Thank you, Vice Chair Vang. Members, House File 1433 was heard February 24th and was laid over. I'll bring House File 1433 back before the committee and move that it be referred to the committee to the Commerce Committee. Representative Frederick, thank you for your work on this bill and taking extra time to continue to work on it. We already took testimony last time, so no additional written testimony was submitted. Deputy Commissioner Vaubel is with us. A number of amendments were submitted by the deadline, and we can take those up. Representative Lippert, you have the H1433 delete all one amendment.
Representative Lippert. Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move the DE1 amendment.
You want to go ahead and explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen is prepared to speak to the amendment.
Great. Representative Chair Hansen, please.
Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. The DE1 amendment is the best faith effort to try to reach a bill that can pass through this committee. It addresses a number of the concerns that were raised by committee members. So what it does is it eliminates the biofuels education portion. It continues the E15 mandate that was in the original bill with its sunsetting in 2029. It provides for, makes explicit what was implicit with the MPCA on underground storage tanks. And it also makes sure that the when we are dealing specifically with ethanol, that it is not considered biofuels. So it does not have the 25% ladder. It refers to ethanol, and it drops the biofuels education program.
Okay, any questions, discussion on the amendment? Deputy Commissioner Vaubel, do you have any comments on this amendment?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. Just that we're the department is neutral on the amendment, but we absolutely look forward to continuing work on this and in further committees, and are just thankful to Representative Frederick for carrying the bill.
Representative Frederick, any comments on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just hoping that we can get this bill out of committee, and if this is what it takes, I'm supportive. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments from committee members?
Mr.
Chair. Okay.
Chair Sundin?
Yes.
Representative Anderson has a question.
Oh, okay. Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was busy trying to take notes when Representative Hansen was speaking, and I caught something but didn't get everything. If he could repeat, something was going to sunset in the year 29. Could he repeat what exactly that was?
Representative Hansen, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. That would be the E15 mandate in 2029. So we'll have to come back in front of the legislature in 2029.
Representative Anderson, any follow-up?
Yeah, that's what I thought I heard. It would be a little bit surprising that if we go ahead and build up infrastructure to whatever extent we can to promote the use of E15 and then have this the mandate expire in several years, to me is a bit counterproductive, and I just wonder, question that sunset, but it is what it is.
Chair Hansen, any further explanation?
We've heard of ethanol, the E15, as being a bridge to the future with more different choices, as we've seen the massive change in the last 10 years on the menu of options that are there. We felt it would be good to come back and readdress this at the end of the decade.
Okay. Representative Anderson, anything further?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Is this a roll call on this, committee administrator?
Not unless, Mr. Chair, not unless someone requests it.
Oh, okay. I'm going to request a roll call.
Okay. All right.
Any further discussion? Okay. Mr. Smith, please conduct the roll call.
Chair Sundin?
Pass.
Sundin, pass. Vice Chair Vang?
Aye.
Vang, aye. Anderson?
I was a yes, but now I think I'm a no.
Anderson, no. Burkle?
Aye.
Burkle, aye. Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Hansen, R?
Hansen, R, aye.
Hansen, R, aye. Hansen, J? Hansen, J? Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Lippert?
Aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick?
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Miller? Excuse. Nelson?
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Thompson?
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Chair Sundin?
No.
Sundin, no.
Hansen J is an aye.
Hansen J, aye. All right. Nine ayes and three nays.
Okay. Motion does prevail on that vote. Representative Anderson, you have two amendments. Would you like to start with the A1 amendment?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't know if these are workable anymore, but the A1 amendment simply changed the date at which the E15 mandate would go into effect from 2022 until 2026. And I do have an amendment to that amendment, Mr. Chair.
You want to go ahead with the amendment to the amendment?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Upon further discussion, visiting with a lot of the folks involved with this, I am a strong supporter of E15, but I didn't think the early date for putting it into effect was realistic. I thought that date should be moved out a few years, 4 to 5 years. So the amendment to the amendment would push that date out, again, staying with 2026 for those that are not in compliance, but adding in the date of 2023 for distributors that can demonstrate equipment compatibility. So they would be ruled to be in compliance with E15 in 2023 if they were compatible. And for all others, depending on the availability of funding and equipment to do that, 2026 for those retail outlets, Mr. Chair.
Any questions to the author of the amendment to the amendment?
Mr. Chair, this is Nancy.
Yes.
Sorry for the confusion. I would defer to Colby, but I think now with the adoption of the DE that those amendments are not, I don't think they're structurally sound anymore, but I would defer to Colby, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Sullivan, could you explain that to the committee and the author?
Mr. Chair and members, Ms. Conley is correct that the A1 and A6 amendments were drafted to the bill prior to Representative Hansen's DE amendment. If the chair will entertain the amendments, I could work with Mr. Smith to make sure the minutes reflect the proper page and line numbers, because the 2022 date now that Representative Anderson is proposing to amend is on page 1, line 21 of the DE. So the page and line numbers in the amendments do not match up, but if the chair will allow, we could fix them as a technical matter for the revisers and Grossman.
Before doing that, I guess I would defer to the wishes of Representative Anderson on this matter.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Sullivan, I appreciate that offer. I would like to attach these if possible, because I do believe that we do have to have a definite time when we're going to put this into effect, and these amendments put together would push those out 4 years for those that are not currently compatible and 1 year for those that can demonstrate compatibility. So yes, I would appreciate if they could somehow be aligned and added to the DE amendment.
Mr. Sullivan, some advice on this?
Mr. Chair and members, the A1 amendment, Representative Anderson's A1, could be amended to match the DE1 language by, on this is on the A1 amendment, page 1, line 1, after 1433, insert the H1433 DE1 amendment, comma, and then on line 1.2 of the A1, to get the line numbers, page and line numbers matched up with the DE1, the change would be line 2, delete page 4 and insert page 1, delete line 32 and insert line 21. Okay. And would that change to the A1? Sorry, Mr. Chair. Would that change to the A1, then the page and line numbers will match up?
Okay, that would satisfy the needs of the author then, Representative Anderson?
I believe so. I would rely on Mr. Sullivan, but yeah, it would seem to be working in that order.
Given that, I believe we should add the amendment to the amendment first and move on that on a vote. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, that motion prevails. The A6 is amended. Okay, so to the A6. You want to, if staff would explain that addition, the technical language as described one more time so we all understand and so the author is satisfied.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the committee just adopted the A6, which modifies the A1. So now the A1 amendment will, as amended, will read page 1, line 21, delete 2022, and insert 2023, comma, for distributors that can demonstrate equipment compatibility, and no later than July 1st, 2026 for all distributors as funding and construction materials become available. So this additional language on the implementation date for the E15 mandate increase from E10 to E15. Now it would say that can take place no sooner than 2023 for distributors with compatible equipment, and no later than July 1st, 2026 for all distributors as funding and construction materials become available.
Terrific. Is the author of the amendment satisfied with that explanation?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson, as I am as well. Okay. The A1 amendment, as amended, is before us. Any further discussion, Representative Anderson? Questions from members?
None for me, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 as amended, say, excuse me.
Representative Hansen.
Vice Chair Vang? I'm sorry. Representative Hansen. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get the department on the record on their support for the amendment, if that's possible.
Andrea Vobel and company.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen. We are also neutral on this amendment, but we do look forward to working with all of you in the future to make this bill what we're hoping it can be. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Questions? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 as amended, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Okay, this motion prevails, and the amendment as amended is adopted. Okay, there being no further questions, any further discussion from members? Okay. Seeing no further discussion, thank you, members, for your work on this. It's a work in progress. This is an important issue for many of us in agriculture. I will work to continue as it moves through other committees. Representative Frederick, any closing items before I renew my motion?
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I hope to have everyone's support. Thank you.
Okay. Motion is before us. Mr. Smith, please call the vote.
Chair Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. Vice Chair Vang.
Aye.
Vang, aye. Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Anderson, aye. Representative Burkle.
Aye.
Representative Burkle, aye. Representative Eklund.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen, R.
Hansen, R, aye.
Hansen, R, aye. Representative Hansen, J.
Hansen, J, aye.
Hansen, J, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Representative Lippert.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Representative Lewick.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Representative Miller, excused. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. It's 11 ayes and 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Okay, on a vote of 11 to 0, the motion prevails and the bill as amended will move on to the next committee. Thank you, Representative Frederick and members. Next up, we have two cottage food bills. Representative Munson is on tap, but he's not on the committee. Representative Vang, would you please move the Munson bill to get it before the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 433 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Okay, the bill is before us. Welcome, Representative Munson. We have about 20 minutes blocked for this bill. Understand you have a DE amendment. Vice Chair Vang, could you move that for him and get the bill into shape he wants to present it?
Mr. Chair, I move the A21069 amendment for the author.
Representative Munson, please explain your amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and to Representative Vang. This is the Food Freedom Act, and it addresses the restrictions that are being currently placed on the cottage food industry. As we saw during the pandemic last year, there's a lot of things that can happen to disrupt our food supply, causing price spikes and food shortages, and we recognize the importance of local food as being an option, locally made food. And we're very thankful that there are people out there producing food locally. Under the current cottage food regulations, it's very restrictive of what they can make and what they can sell. I also recognize that a lot of people are producing and selling food that are not allowed under current regulations. And we see this especially during the holidays where people are selling, you know, tamales or in the Somali community, the sambusas, on Facebook Marketplace. And so we recognize that there are a lot of foods being produced that are not currently allowed under law. This industry is very important to the immigrant community for a lot of people starting businesses. And of course, in rural Minnesota, where people can sell their wares at farmers markets, or to fundraisers and to raise money in the community and to supplement their incomes. And so this bill would separate foods into two categories of being not potentially hazardous and to potentially recognizing that there are potentially hazardous homemade foods, but authorizing the sale of both and allowing the not potentially hazardous homemade foods, which are currently allowed under the cottage food bills, to be sold by a third party, whether it's at a local store or at an event, and that would expand their ability to increase sales. As Representative Vang's bill does, it would remove the current cap of $18,000, which is really arbitrary, especially depending on the food that's being produced. But we need to create a longer runway for people to get their businesses off the ground, which I think is very important, because the burden of creating a commercial kitchen for a producer of food. While that may be the ultimate goal of every food producer is to go into, you know, large business, the process to getting to that spot of having a commercial kitchen is different for each food producer, and it can create a major burden preventing a lot of new entrepreneurs from getting into the business of producing food. So this bill would remove that cap, as Representative Vang's bill does, but it expands it to the number of products that can be sold. And then it also doesn't require licensing from the state, which we see is also a pretty burdensome red tape, especially amongst people in the immigrant community, since so many of these regulations and trainings they're only offered in English. And there's a lot of people in the immigrant community who are trying, seeing difficulty navigating this red tape of government. And we don't want to have more people breaking the law. So I do recognize that there's a fiscal note that was put out. And the fiscal note, I just want to point out, is it's adding a cost to this bill because of the expected result of additional foodborne illnesses in Minnesota. While at the same time, it says that the expected rate of increase in investigations is currently unknown. The fact is that this regulation, this food freedom bill, has been passed in multiple states, in Wyoming, in North Dakota, Utah, in Maine, that they have passed these bills, and there's been no reported increase in foodborne illness as a result of this bill. So that's very important, and that would hold true in Minnesota, there wouldn't be an additional significant cost here, which is what the fiscal note is projecting. There is a little opposition from existing licensed food producers. Obviously, the natural instinct is to not have more people enter their business. That's understandable, but this would allow, I think this bill is very important for addressing the shortages that we had last year for food supply. It will help farmers sell directly and will help more people start businesses to sell food. So with that, I will see if there's anything else I wanted to mention about the bill. There are many states that are seven additional states that are considering this bill, this type of bill this year. Iowa, our neighbor to the south, South Dakota, Oklahoma, North Carolina, South Carolina, Indiana and Arkansas also have this bill being introduced in their legislatures. So there's a movement to expand freedom and liberty for people that want to start their own business selling food. And we'll see that hopefully across the country. Let's see. No, I think that's it. I'm looking forward to many of the testifiers that will be testifying for Representative Vang's bill. And this really takes Representative Vang's bill and expands it, expands opportunities for people a little more. So with that, I'll stand for questions from members of the committee.
Any questions on this amendment? Hearing none, seeing none, A21-069, delete everything amendment, is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay. Opposed, say nay. Okay, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. No one's signed up to testify, but written testimony was submitted for this and the next bill. Assistant Commissioner Bailey is here from the department. Do you have any comments on this bill, Commissioner Bailey?
Yes, thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. We at MDA, we have concerns about the bill. I know that Representative Munson respectfully talked about the red tape, but it's the ensuring the integrity of our food supply that's actually keeping Minnesotans safe. And the issue that we have was really a disparity is translation services in regards to funding for translating materials into other languages such as Hmong and Somali, in addition to Spanish. So those are the concerns that we have. And already farmers are selling directly to their consumers through e-commerce currently, and had to do so during COVID.
Okay.
That's what I have, Chair Sundin.
Great. Thank you very much for those comments. Any questions for the author? Okay. The fiscal note was completed. We touched on that. Unfortunately, now that there's a D, a revised note will need to be completed. We'll look for that before the omnibus bill is put together. So, seeing no further discussion. Oh, excuse me, Representative Anderson. You're on mute. Representative Anderson, you are muted.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you. If Mr. Bailey is still available, I'd like to ask him a question.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair.
Yep. Representative Anderson, please.
Mr. Bailey, the cottage foods industry has been around for a number of years, as has legislation to modify and change the cottage foods industry. Does the department have any kind of an official stance on increasing the maximum sales figure from current 18,000 up to either 78,000, or in the case of the Munson bill, no cap at all? What does the department feel about raising it to that extent?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you so much, Chair Sundin and Representative Anderson, for the question. MDA, we actually support businesses and access to local foods in regards to cottage food. In regards to the $18,000 cap to $78,000, we have some issues in regards to the cap being at that point. I think that there's lots of room for coming to a mid point. Between MDA and the cottage food producers. I mean, we actually want everyone to have prosperity, but we also want the food supply to be safe at the same time.
Yeah, thank you. Did I see another hand up? Commissioner Bailey, please. Representative Loic.
Yes, it's maybe something that Commissioner Bailey can speak to. Obviously, we had a fiscal note on a projected impact on food safety. Can anybody from the Department of Ag speak a little more specifically on what kind of metrics they based that projection on, or did they go to the Department of Health and look to that, or did they, in other words, there's a lot of different agencies that are dealing with food safety issues. I'm just kind of curious as to what were the metrics involved in that fiscal note.
Commissioner Bailey, can you weigh in on that?
Yes. Thank you so much, Chair Sundin. Thank you so much, Representative Look, for that question. I actually have our division director, if you allow me to allow her to speak. Her name is Catherine Simon, to speak to that.
Mm-hmm. Catherine Simons, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Catherine Simon. I'm the division director of food and feed safety for the Department of Agriculture. So to the question, Chair, for the fiscal note that was prepared for 0433, it was prepared off the original version, not the current amendment, but where the information came from, majority of the expenses were actually in updating the materials for the licensing and for the other information that we share. The majority cost and the references to the foodborne illness, we did consult with the Department of Health. They did not have the ability to provide us any specific language or funds to put in there. So what we had included was, in terms of public health and food safety, it is a known fact that home-prepared from personal residence food items that are sold are considered to be less safe and have been historically been the cause for foodborne illness outbreaks. And so we put in a note for the cost for the foodborne illness outbreak that we had already conducted off of an existing cottage food outbreak. We put that information in there, but it's not projected out at a rate since the rates for foodborne illnesses are relevant to, there's a number of factors that go into the number that you would find most into your surveillance factors, as well as to the population that's actually exposed. So there's a number of different factors that would go into the rate and whether or not we would be able to actually identify it as an outbreak and then associated inspections costs.
Thank you. Representative Lewick, any follow-up on this?
That sheds a little more light on it. I guess as one who was involved at the county level with a, we had delegated food and beverage licensing authority for everything from nursing homes to school cafeterias to your local bar and grill. That's certainly an area that we need to at least understand the potential metrics there, because the last thing in the world we want to do, and my concern is we don't want to, you know, the end point is here, we don't want to do anything that would reduce the confidence in those cottage industries product. And so we just want to make sure we look hard at that and don't unintentionally set something into motion that that could do that. Because it's obviously can be a pretty sensitive area. It just takes one train wreck to hurt an industry, you know, and sometimes it's almost unrecoverable. So anyway, that's all I had to say. But yeah, I appreciate that. Gives me a little little more perspective on that food safety.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Lewick. Any questions, further questions for the author? Okay. Last word, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I recognize that there that this does expand freedom for people producing food. And you know, as someone whose local town had an annual blues festival and rib cook off, where they have amateurs cook ribs, but they in witnessing they can't give away or sell this food to the public because of restrictive laws. Because it is a potentially hazardous homemade food, I think that we should also recognize that there are currently a lot of people selling foods that are not regulated by the government, or they are. I guess they're doing this in violation of the law, but that this bill passing in other states has not increased any foodborne illness outbreaks. I think this is an important bill, and I would appreciate I can work on this bill as we lay it over for possible inclusion and address some concerns. This does not prevent the Minnesota Department of Health from doing investigations as it does today with outbreaks. Obviously, people cooking food in their own homes is also a risk that people take every day. But this bill requires that sellers of these foods disclose to the public that they're not cooking it in a commercial kitchen, or that they don't have a license. That's important. It's an important disclosure. It's important to inform the consumer, and we made sure that was in this bill as well. So, thank you everybody for your time, and leave it at that.
Okay. Before laying this over, I'd appreciate if the author would provide the committee with information as to the time and place of the barbecue.
We'll do that. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, House File 433, as amended, is laid over. Last bill today is Vice Chair Vang, House File 1430, another cottage food industry changes. Please move your bill, Vice Chair Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1430 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Act Finance Bill. Mr. Chair, I also have a DE amendment, and if you'll be okay, I will move the 821072 amendment to get the bill in the shape that I'd like to present it to.
That's your DE amendment?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
You want to vote on this or hear from your witnesses first? It's up to you.
We can vote on the DE amendment first because the DE is the actual bill,
okay.
Jacketed the bill. It was an earlier version from last year, and so the DE is the actual bill that we'll be talking
okay,
about.
All those in favor of the DE amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Okay, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. You have testimony from a few people. Vice Chair Vang.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll say a couple words first, and then I know that there were a couple folks of testifiers who did not make the online posted. So I will make a few remarks, and then I can we can start with the testifiers, and I can name a few of the testifiers that wanted to testify today.
Please do introduce them as you proceed.
Okay. So House File 1430 as amended is basically a bill for cottage food producers that sell homemade and shelf staple food like bread, cookies, and jams. They sell their food direct to consumer and at farmers markets and community events. The food that they sell is very safe. It is required by law to be non-potentially hazardous. Minnesota cottage food industry has grown in recent years. In 2020, there were more than 5,000 cottage food producers in the state. Cottage food also helps farmers and creates jobs, especially in rural communities and small towns. Many people sell cottage food to provide for their families and to start and grow their businesses. During the pandemic, selling cottage food has provided a lifeline for Minnesotans who are out of work. Although state law has allowed for many people to start these businesses, state law places some arbitrary limits on them that are not tied to food safety. These limits keep cottage food producers from earning a living, growing their businesses, and using the cottage food law as a stepping stone to becoming a licensed food business. The state caps a cottage food producer gross sales at $18,000. That is gross, not net, so producers earn far less. Across the country, there are 34 states who do not have gross sales cap for cottage food producers, and among the minority of states that have gross sales caps, Minnesota's cap is one of the lowest. The state also limits types of businesses cottage food producers can be. It allows cottage food producers to be sole proprietorships with employees, but prevents cottage food producers from registering their businesses as LLCs. This restriction makes it difficult for farmers to use the cottage food law and exposes producers' personal assets to liability. Minnesota is the only state in the country that allows cottage food sales but disallow cottage food producers from organizing as LLCs. This is an important time to remove these unnecessary restrictions. This legislation raises the gross cap to $78,000 so producers can earn a living selling cottage food. It also puts Minnesota law in line with the laws in other states by allowing cottage food producers to organize their businesses as LLCs and other business entities. And thus, by taking these steps, we can make it easier for people to recover from the pandemic, create flexible jobs, and help our cottage food producers work and succeed. And we can also increase access to local food in our communities and at farmers and markets. And with that, Mr. Chair, I can go on with my next testifier. Which is Shelly Erickson. She's president of the Minnesota Cottage Food Producers Association. And I think I have about four more testifiers that's not listed.
Shelly Erickson, can you identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair Sundin and committee members for taking the time to meet with us today. My name is Shelly Erickson, president of the Minnesota Cottage Food Producers Association. I have been advocating for cottage foods in Minnesota for 11 years. In 2015, the cottage food law was amended to allow for the sales of non-potentially hazardous foods from homes, farmers markets, and community events. As Representative Vang said, we now have nearly 5,000 cottage food producers. Cottage food producers come from all walks of life. Many bake as a second job. Others are retired or have a disability. Some want to use cottage foods as a stepping stone to one day have their own brick and mortar shop, and others are farmers. What all cottage food producers have in common is the desire to produce safe, non-potentially hazardous products for others in order to earn an income and make a better life for themselves. Minnesota's cottage food law provides individuals an opportunity to open a food business that for many would otherwise be too costly and therefore out of reach. Currently, the cottage food law limits sales to an $18,000 gross revenue cap, and department policy disallows a cottage food producer from forming their business as an LLC. With such a restrictive sales cap, cottage food producers are unable to earn a livable wage, and this should not be allowed to happen. In closing, cottage food producers are simply asking you for a chance to earn a living and conduct our businesses in a wise and safe way. Please support this bill. It will create jobs and opportunity for cottage food producers and help many people better their lives. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you, Shelley Erickson. Vice Chair Vang, additional testifiers?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Have next is Kathy Zeman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Farmers Association.
Kathy Zeman, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Sundin, Representative Vang, and committee members. My name is Kathy Zeman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Farmers Market Association, the owner of Simple Harvest Farm just south of Northfield in Rice County, and a registered cottage food producer. MFMA has about 306 farmers markets with 4,000 or so vendors operating at any given time in all of Minnesota's 87 counties. The growth of the cottage food industry over the past several decades has been a big benefit to our farmers markets and vendors and to our produce farmers. For produce farmers, the cottage food law gives them a value-added market for all their canned goods that extends their sales year-round, not just limited to Minnesota's short growing season. It's a financial boost to local economies across the state. MFMA is strongly supportive of the required food safety training for everyone, which Minnesota's cottage food law does provide. Food safety is pretty critical for food farmers and food makers, not just because it helps them provide food to their neighbors that is prepared safely, but because as businesses, they also never want to see any food recalls due to foodborne illnesses. The need to allow LLCs to sell under the cottage food law is imperative for our many family farms who are cottage food producers. It's a financial burden in the current law that has no connection to food safety that forces our LLC family farms to have to create another sole proprietor business structure with the accompanying extra expense of insurance, record keeping, tax filing, etc. MDA has suggested a transitional license category to help businesses transition to becoming licensed. We think this is an idea that is worth exploring in the future, but we do not think a transitional license should take away from the cottage food law or the reforms proposed in this bill. These are separate issues and should be treated that way. For example, there are many cottage food producers who are selling less than $5,000 and have no desire to become licensed, but who want to form LLCs because it is a recommended good business practice to protect their personal assets. They should not have to become licensed just to organize their businesses. The cottage food law also remains an important stepping stone for home-based food producers to test and grow their business before deciding whether they want to become licensed. In closing, the Minnesota Farmers Market Association is in full support of this bill, and we will continue to do our education and outreach to help build a vibrant and thriving local food shed in Minnesota. We ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy Zeman. Vice Chair Vang.
Mr. Chair. Yep, next testifier is Amina Adeyemi, from Vion Cakes.
Hey, please continue. Identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed with your testimony. Or maybe not. You have another testifier that can
Yes, Mr. Continue? Chair. I have Matt Rosen from Baker's Dozen.
Okay. Matt Rosen, please identify yourself for the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for your time today. My name is Matt Rosen. I'm a cottage food producer from Eden Prairie, but I also have my retail food handler's license as well. I'd like to give you just a little background on me. I retired from the military 23 years of service in 2015, and I was working that typical 8-to-5 job when I literally stumbled upon a passion for baking on a family vacation in 2017. I had some encouragement from coworkers, began asking to buy the goodies that I was bringing into the office to share. I became a cottage food producer in 2018, and the Baker's Dozen was born. Being the dreamer that I am, I had dreams of making this a full-time business from day one. So I began by selling to coworkers, doing farmers markets, and selling through the website that I created. Fast forward to July of 2020, and I made the decision to take the leap of faith and quit my job in order to try and make this give this a full-time go. I have the luxury of having a military retirement coming in that helps me supplement my income while I attempt to grow this into a thriving business. Because of the sales cap currently in place, most other CFPs or cottage food producers will never get this chance. For example, with an $18,000 gross sales cap, I would make roughly $6.77 an hour for a 40-hour week. Without my retirement benefits to offset this, it would be impossible for me to even attempt to make this a full-time business. I recently received my retail food handler's license, and I am now legally allowed to operate out of a commercial kitchen. I have friends in the food industry who own a commercial kitchen, and we have a partnership in place where I trade my baking services for kitchen space and time. Without this connection, it would be near impossible for me to even think about moving into a commercial kitchen. Prior to my current partnership, I explored the option of moving into a commercial kitchen, and I was blown away by how expensive it was. It would be roughly $1,000 a month, and that was based on roughly 24 hours a week, and that is during off-peak times. Building my own commercial kitchen from the ground up, well, that's not even an option. That would take years to recoup that kind of a cost. I've been blessed with this opportunity to grow my business and see how far I can go. Unfortunately, for many of my friends and colleagues, they may never get this opportunity. I would like to leave you with this. I have heard people say that being a cottage food producer is nothing more than a hobby. For some, yes, it is just a hobby. But for some, it is only a hobby because the current regulations are forcing them to keep it this way. For many, this is a legitimate business and a way to support their families. Please support cottage food producers' ability to earn a living. Thank you all for your time, and I appreciate your consideration with this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Rosen. Are there further testifiers? Vice Chair Bang.
Yes. Next is Jennifer Caribou from Zella Mays by Jennifer.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee for allowing me to testify before you today. My name is Jennifer Caribou. I'm a cottage food producer in Mankato and a small business owner. I was 16 years old and a single mom when I had my son, and statistically speaking, should not be where I am today. When you're doing everything you can just to get by and it's not enough, it's beyond discouraging. Luckily, I was able to create a successful small business and meet the financial needs of my family. Of course, it took a lot of hard work and dedication. Now I find myself in a position where I cannot work outside of the home. I am a caregiver for my father, who has early onset Alzheimer's, and my elderly grandfather, who has cancer. I also help care for my grandchildren and provide occasional drop-in care for other family members who are teachers when I'm available. My cottage food business has given me the flexibility to earn an income from home and take care of my family. I know many Minnesotans are in the similar boat. The legislature passed the current cottage food law to improve the lives of Minnesotans. It has helped women, people of color, immigrants, and people with disabilities start businesses from their home. It has also helped displaced workers earn income during the pandemic and has increased access to our local food in our local community. Unfortunately, some of the restrictions in the law are making it difficult for producers to keep their businesses and earn a living wage. MDA's policy of disallowing us to be LLCs means that we have to assume a much greater risk than other businesses in the state. MDA is the only agency that does not allow cottage food producers to organize as an LLC. However, producers are small businesses. We can have employees, register as a DBA, own trademarks, and file business and file tax returns the same as LLCs do. It is very discouraging to work under such a restrictive cap and to have everything, or and to have to risk everything my husband and I have worked so hard for because of a department policy. When a person chooses to become a cottage food producer in their home, it may be because it meets the needs of their personal situation, or they do not have the capital to build or rent a commercial kitchen. In Mankato, where I live, the only commercial kitchen that would have been available for me to rent has now closed. And even when it was open, it would have cost thousands of dollars to rent. This bill is an important reform. It will align us better with the majority of other states that have more progressive cottage food laws. It will reduce barriers to opening a small business. It will also support lower income and underrepresented individuals by providing an opportunity to start and have a business where you sell safe, low-risk foods. I really thank you for your time today and your thoughtful consideration.
Thank you, Jennifer Curview. Appreciate your testimony. Representative or Vice Chair Vang, any further testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I just have one final testifier, Austin Maley from Austin Acres.
Okay. Mr. Maley, please identify yourself for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So my name is Austin Maley. I live in Avon, Minnesota, and I'm a cottage food producer. I'm also currently attending college locally, and so I started my business when I was 11 years old and with the help of my parents. And for the last 8 years, I've been building my business from something that started out as a 4-H project in food preservation, and that has turned into a viable business for me. Under the current cottage food law, I'm able to financially afford to grow my already established cottage food law business. The restrictive revenue cap has required my dad to also register as a cottage food producer in order for me to maintain my business in the event that I hit that cap. Additionally, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's policy does not let me become an LLC. At the age of 19, I'm attending college and I'm also running my business. I cannot earn a decent income as a strictly cottage food producer, and I'm in a position to assume a greater personal risk than other businesses in Minnesota. I should be able to earn a living wage and be allowed to protect my personal assets. I ask that you pass this bill as it will help me protect my ability to earn a livable income, expand my business in the future, and support a family. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Vice Chair Bang, any further testimony or input on the bill?
No, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to take any further questions.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Lloyd, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about the restriction on organizing as LLC. The comment was made that was Department of Agriculture policy. I guess I'd like to explore that and find out, was that something that was put in by rulemaking? I've also found out that quite often things that don't make sense were driven by some legislative action in the past. So could Department of Ag or somebody clarify whether that's purely rulemaking department policy, or does that go back to something specifically we did as legislators in the past?
Thank you. Can the department weigh in on that, please? Please.
Yes. Chair Sundin and Representative Luck, thank you so much for that question.
Bailey, thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to defer to Catherine Simon, our division director, to answer this one.
Okay. Okay. Don't be shy.
Yep. Chair Sundin, Representative.
Yes. So the reason why we are limiting it to individuals is because that's the language that's actually in the current exclusion that the cottage food law is written under. The reason that this came up is when we initially started the registration process after the passage of the new cottage food exemption from licensing, we started to receive registrations that included LLCs, often from farms, as was brought up by some of the testifiers. In verifying that we had the legal authority to accept registrations from those LLCs, because the language in the statute is currently excludes individuals rather than persons. There's a legal review there, and it was determined that since the language is individuals, we would not be able to accept registrations from LLCs.
Okay. Yeah, any further questions on that?
Yeah, no, thank you. That clarified. And it would seem that we certainly ought to fix that. So whether Representative Vang saw that flaw or that anomaly, or whether we just, you know, the Department of Agriculture raised it, it certainly, you know, let's push away those kind of restrictions if they don't have to do with food safety, and just let free enterprise take its course in that area. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Luke. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Vang, there's some things in your bill I think are good. The one thing that causes me to wonder, and going by the numbers that were in the submitted letter to us from evidently testimony in the Senate, of the approximately about 5,000 folks involved in cottage foods, the vast majority, like 4,000 or so, are in this tier one, where the income they bring in is under 18,000, between 5,000 and 18, and they currently pay no license fee. So I'm just wondering why you would include that big group in a new license fee and then lower the fee charged to those that really have gotten into this thing in bigger detail, right now up to the $18,000 threshold. If you'd be willing to look at that and modifying that somewhat to take away this licensing fee on those smaller individuals in the cottage foods industry.
Vice Chair Vang, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Anderson, for your question. Historically, this program has not received much funding, and so the registration fees is a way to help MDA help administer this program. That is something that has been brought up, and so I'm open to looking at it. It's something we have made the training used to cost them as well, but we made that at no cost, training no cost to them. And so I think a $25 registration fee is a reasonable fee for folks who want to register under this exception.
Any follow-up on that, Representative Anderson? Thank you. Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I simply want to thank Representative Vang for her work on this bill. And this is gets to be a complicated area quickly, and this issue is important to constituents of mine, including the LLC issue. So thank you for your work in this area.
Okay. Any other comments, questions from the committee? Okay, thank you. I do have one, and it's not directly to the bill, but we've got a room full of people here that just may know how to help me with this situation, and it's a situation dealing with canning vegetables, berries, whatever, jelly. In the past year with this COVID situation that we're dealing with, a lot of people started home canning again. And we've been doing it for decades, and we can't find wide mouth lids. So there's never going to be an opportunity to ask a group of intelligent people, where in the devil do I get some wide mouth lids? And I'm not alone here. The shelves are bare. How does this affect the industry, and where the devil do I get some for myself? Any answers?
Chair Sundin, this is Kathy Zeman.
Kathy Zeman, thank you.
I can make one comment. I know that there's a whole bunch of wide mouth and lids out in Morris by Kathy Drager. So if you've ever heard of Kathy Drager with the Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships of the University of Minnesota, they've never ran out this year. But it is a huge problem, and we, you know, Fleet Farm, Menards, but not in Morris, Minnesota. So go west.
Could you provide the committee chair with contact information to that effect?
Yes, I can. I will.
Much appreciated. Any other, Mr. Bailey, Commissioner Bailey.
Yes, thank you, Chair Sundin and other members. I just want to clarify first is that the registration that they're complying with, this is a tier two that tier one complies with, complies with the exclusion and not a license. So I had wanted to say that. And when we're talking about the 5,000 cottage food producers, we're focusing on tier two for the transitional license. And that's about 229 producers that have sales of greater than 5,000. MDA supports business and access to local foods. We fully understand that the current license structure to include the cottage food producer exemption, it does meet the need of some of these developing businesses, but we also know that we have to support the cottage food exemption in general and to not adversely or unnecessarily impact the majority of current cottage food producers. We also propose that we target the solution to those individuals who seek to grow their businesses by leveraging existing financial support and business development programs to obtain access to facilities and obtain access to additional funds. And that also includes providing for business structures and allowing businesses to develop and provide value-added products. One thing that I wanted to add is that the transitional license basically is a bridge. It bridges the gap between those producers who qualify for the cottage food exemption and those who whose operations require a food handler license. And so MDA wants to work with farmers and other small businesses to identify reasonable food safety requirements. Lastly, I wanted to also point out that a system of licensing with reasonable food safety measures would support developing businesses and help equitably ensure the integrity, safety, and dependability of the food supply.
Thank you for helping clarify. Any other questions, comments on the bill from the committee? Okay, hearing none. Representative Vang, what's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will renew my motion to laid over House File 1430 as amended for possible inclusion.
Okay, House File 1430 as amended is laid over. That concludes the business of this committee today. Thank you for your questions and comments, and we are adjourned.